For anyone visiting and living in central Tokyo, come visit the Nakameguro Tap Room from Baird Brewery. Opened in 2008, Nakameguro Tap Room is the first Tokyo area tap room from Baird Brewery. Their kitchen specializes in New Haven style appeats, which I have told you is the best style of Neapolitan pizza. New Haven style places a high emphasis on high temperature baking, fresh seasonal toppings, and a crispy light crust. Combined with all the classic Japan-based Baird beers on tap, enjoy all vintage beer hall feels at Nakameguro Tap Room. There's even a sofa area and a large TV screen great for sporting events. Only a 2-minute walk from Nakameguro Station, the tap room is open daily until 10 p.m. For more information, visit bairdbeer.com.
I would say that our biggest selling point is for people who live in the area on the weekdays.
Yeah.
Like the, not party goers, but you want to go out for a drink and a burger.
Yeah.
So we are that spot for them. And on the weekends, we're the spot for people who travel to Shimokitazawa and want to experience a coaster.
Hello there. Welcome to Made in Japan, Conversations with Meljo Catalan. This is my podcast about Japan, but it's not just your run-of-the-mill Cool Japan podcast. I want to explore a side of Japan besides the sushi and the sumo, anime, and video games. I'm here to extrapolate and meditate with the local people that your travel guide probably doesn't touch on. People that are hungry for making it, and people that have made it. This podcast is my talks with them.
Doobie-doo-bow-bow!
Hi! How are you doing? I miss you guys. Anyways, I just want to say first off that Made in Japan podcast is a donation-based podcast. You can donate to my Ko-fi page. That's ko-fi.com/madeinjapanpodcast. All donations go and help with the production and give beverages and or snacks to my guests. So it's good to be back, and I want to make a little announcement that I decided I'm going to do like mini series within my podcast, and I'm going to call the series Made and Served in Japan. And what that means is that I'm going to, for specific episodes as this one that you're going to listen to, I want to give a voice especially to restaurant owners, cafe owners, or any small business establishment within the local communities here in Tokyo and in Japan. And I want to, whether foreigner owned or Japan owned, it doesn't matter. I really thought about this a lot, and I wanted to give a voice specifically in the restaurant industry, the food industry. And I thought I would like to do this as well as, interviewing and chatting with guests in all walks of life. So I want to kick off this mini series, Made and Served in Japan, with he's an amazing, amazing dude. He goes by the name Thomas Kim. He is a chef and one of eight co-owners of a local bar called Coasters Tokyo in the hip area of Shimokitazawa. Him and his cohorts, there's about eight of them now, and six of them are on deck to take care of this bar, Coasters, and they also have a brewery, a microbrewery that they make beer and then sell at their bar, as well as,
Tomas cooking up some delicious, delicious food. So I wanted to have Tomas go on, and I was just so grateful to have him come on. And I went to Coasters during before dinner service, and he had a chance to chat out with me and share his story. And I really wanted to share his story for all of you guys. I just, you know, I can't say much except that it is a hard thing to open up a restaurant / cafe / bar in Japan, especially in Tokyo. So this mini series is out to go and you know, have you guys listen to the stories, the trials, and the challenges that it takes to open in a food establishment. Food and drink establishment. And yeah, I thought this would be a great first mini series episode. So without further ado, this is my man, Tomas Kim, chef and co-owner of Coasters Tokyo. And here we go.
What did you have for breakfast today, buddy?
We had torta.
Torta?
Torta is Spanish.
But, style, okay.
The potato. Omelette and...
Sorry, my bad American pronunciation. Omelettes.
Omelettes.
Omelettes. But yeah, dude, I want to say thank you for having me here today.
Thank you for having us on the podcast, man.
Well, so this is why I really wanted to have you on, is because like... It's all started when I shout out to Haim and La Cabina, because mm-hmm. the one thing that he really was talking about was like he wouldn't have made it in Japan because of you, and he mentioned your name.
He gave me too much credit.
And I'm like, because he kept saying you know, if I hadn't had help with Tomas, so he was praising you.
When Haim opened La Cabina, what happened is. His mom got sick for pretty sick, yeah. And he had to go back to Mexico to take care of her. And that happened a month and a half, 2 months after the opening.
Wow!
So I was there on the day of the opening with him.
Wow!
So he got pretty crazy, pretty busy.
I'm guessing he was really nervous about it the whole time.
Yeah, of course. Like any opening is. He had a couple of soft openings as pop-ups here and there in Tokyo.
Yeah.
And then when, of course, he first opened the truck in front of OL, that was the big opening.
Yeah,
and that's like when we realized the full potential, let's say. Of the.
That's awesome. I mean, and shout out to La Cabina. I'm so glad he's doing so well, too. And
second place, two places.
I know. And the second place is near my workplace.
Yeah, so it's like, good for you. Yeah.
But anyways, we're here about you, Tomas. And like, your story here with Coasters has to be I am so amazed about the background of your place, right? But
it's pretty easy, actually. Huh? It's a drunk story. It's it's a couple dudes sitting at a bar, getting drunk, and writing stuff on a napkin. And the next day, instead of just waking up and being, okay, that was some bullshit we were talking about, it's just like, let's do it. It's
That's
a real
so
project.
Awesome.
So,
can you take me back? Like, I guess, what's your background like? Where did you grow up? Or
I was born and raised in France. Mm-hmm. Studied general studies until my second year. So I did twice my first class of high school.
What?
Because I was a bad student. I was a very... bad student.
Hanging out with the friends.
Exactly. Skateboarding.
There you go.
Smoking weed.
There you go.
And on my third year, my head teacher told me that I was pretty good at some of the majors. Mm. Worldly, that was mostly like economics and math. And the rest, I was not interested. Awful. I like to say not interested because it doesn't make me sound as dumb, but you know.
So.
And she offered me to go through apprenticeship rather than keep going on that general study field.
Yeah.
And at first, I was like, yeah, fuck that. Like, what do you mean? Like, I'm not good enough for school? Or like, she's like, no. No, like there's a way to learn a job at your age and actually be on the field and so basically start doing stuff with your hands.
Yeah.
And the choices I had was either become a mechanic, electrician, a plumber, or a chef. So these were the fields that were available for me.
Or they just ordered you, choose one of these.
At the time I remember I was really pissed with her, but but thinking about it now, that's the best thing that she's one of the person that actually wanted me to succeed, you know.
Yeah.
And she could see that I wasn't going anywhere in the regular study field, so so I chose chef. And in France, chef school, it's like army.
That's what I hear. Mm. Yeah, like it's like literally the military.
Yeah, yeah. You have to wear a uniform. So in France, you don't have to wear uniforms at school, except if private in schools sometimes.
Yeah.
And at in hospitality school, you have to show up in a suit every day. Every day wear your suit, attend class in suit.
Wow.
And the way the courses I followed was apprenticeship, so 2 weeks at school, 2 weeks in working at a company.
Oh, wow. So when you go to school, are you actually wearing those old school like chef
uniforms?
Yes. Like those really long sleeves?
With your name and brawl in.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. With the long hat, tall hat?
With the tuck. It's nice. Called a tuck, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No worries. It's, it's to distinguish the rank
with the education. Okay.
It's less and less.
Okay.
In the very classic cuisine, you'll still have the chefs wearing the tuck, but most of the restaurants they don't.
Do you like to wear the chef coats?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We've got this project with my friend Kevin.
Yep.
Which is unrelated to Coaster and more like going back to gastronomic cuisine.
Oh, I think I've seen those photos on Instagram.
Yes.
Like really fine dining looking.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And I get to wear my chef jacket when I go there. And, you know, you get in the room, people, they look at you, and the uniform, I guess.
Yeah, there you go. I'm not a chef, but I've always thought it's pretty badass.
Mm.
When I see a chef and their uniform is not dirty at all.
Yeah.
You know they're badass.
That's the beginning of the day. Because they're slacking.
They're just lucky.
No, but also because when you're actually in the kitchen, on top of your vest, you will usually have an apron as well.
Okay.
So most of the splash and stuff will get on the apron.
Got it.
And like the head chef in the kitchen, even though he's gonna be cooking, he might have to go in the restaurant to salute the customers and talk to clients and stuff like that.
Sure.
So you need to have your uniform clean, at least in the better class restaurant.
So how many years in culinary school?
So I did three years of apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And then I started working in a hotel. Actually, I got hired in the hotel I was doing my apprenticeship.
Oh, okay.
Got so it. The chef.
So is it like classic French?
Modern okay. French. Modern French. Okay. Classic French, of course, we use every day with the techniques and the products. Mm-hmm. But we try to modernize, you know?
Got it.
Like classic French cuisine, it's pretty heavy. Yeah. Lot of cream, lot of butter.
Yep.
You don't want to eat that every day.
No. Probably have a heart attack.
Yes.
All right, so you're doing your thing. You're kicking ass being a chef. How does this connect to Japan?
So when I was working in France in the hotel, So I had a friend. All my friends, they were attending. Most of my friends were attending regular universities.
Okay.
And one of my best friends, Paul, he had to do an internship abroad for 6 months.
Okay.
And so we were always joking to each other that if ever he got an internship in Japan, I quit my job and I go with him. And that's what happened.
That's so
he got the internship.
Was he like, nah, Tomas is not going to do
no,
it.
No, he knew I was.
He knew he was going to do it? Oh, really?
And I mean, I was, what, 20 years old? So yeah, nothing was holding me back in France.
You came to Japan in 20?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
That's the best age.
The best age. Wow, so what year was this? What were we talking?
2013.
2013? Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, Tokyo, 2013,
yeah.
Okay. So straight to Tokyo? Or?
Straight to Tokyo, yeah.
Okay.
And you know, that was before they started remodeling for the Olympics and stuff like
yes.
that.
So yeah, yes.
There was some English on the billboards and stuff.
But yeah, a little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
You couldn't get phone contracts. You had to go with the pocket Wi-Fi. I don't know if you ever used that.
You know, what's funny though is like, even though there was like little English, but back in those days, like, French restaurants in Tokyo, their menu would be in French, and they would literally have in the katakana form in like all, so you're like, you're speaking French.
Yes.
And I was like, this is pretty cool, too bad.
So I've never worked in a French restaurant in Tokyo, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
So my first job, my very first job in Tokyo, I was working in Roppongi as a... helper.
Okay.
So washing the dishes, washing the glasses, sending finger food.
Okay.
And making simple cocktails.
Oh boy.
So I wasn't in a rush to find anything. I tried modeling and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to jump straight back into the kitchen world. Yeah. I mean, serious, you know, you have to do long hours. I wanted to enjoy my first couple of weeks in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But I had my resumes out there, and what my chef gave me before going to Japan is a recommendation letter from a French chef.
Yeah.
It's pretty heavy. It weighs in here. So of course I get contacted by restaurants.
Yeah.
And I ended up, so I did two interviews in one day, I remember.
Wow.
One for a cafe dining in Ebisu, like Hawaiian cafe dining.
Okay.
I don't remember the name exactly, but, and one for Las Chicas.
Oh, Las Chicas, okay.
Las Chicas, do you know Las Chicas?
Yeah.
So I go first to the Hawaiian place. I did the fitting for the shoes, for the jacket and everything. I was about to work there. I was like, okay, so it's done. I'm still gonna go to Las Chicas, see how it is. I get to Omotesando first time. It's a pretty sick neighborhood. It's clean, it's nice, all the shops and stuff. And Las Chicas is in the back streets of Jingumae.
Yep.
Really cool, really fancy. Mm. I get in there, I'm like, all right, let's do this. This is where I want to work. So I go in there, speak with the chef 5 minutes. He had my recommendation letter.
Sure,
so he just straight away.
Nice.
So yes, I'm hired. I can start 3 days later.
Nice.
So I'm like, cool. Okay, let's do this. Get in there, learn the ropes. I mean, of the kitchen in Las Chicas. It was pretty similar to what I was doing in France in terms of organization within the kitchen.
Okay.
Like the size of the team and the brigade.
Yeah. How many are in your brigade?
So Las Chicas, when I started, so there was the chef, hot section chef, two pasta pizza chefs, two cold sections chefs and one dessert chef.
It's ridiculous.
So I started on the pizza pasta section.
Okay, of course.
Because I was a bit advanced already, so they just say, okay.
Cool. Oh, I thought they were like, he still looks Italian. Let him put him on the pizza.
So Las Chicas, one of my best and worst work experience.
Okay.
I will come to the worst part later.
Okay.
First year, really awesome, great team.
Yeah.
We work a lot, but we also have a lot of fun. We get our entries in all the clubs and bars in Tokyo.
Sure.
So, really awesome time.
Yep. Yeah.
9 months into working there, the chef gets fired. So
the head chef.
The head chef.
Okay.
Disagreement with the boss at the time. We get a new chef. Spanish this time.
Nice.
At this time, so we go from a brigade of about 8 people, 3 people. One on the hot section, one on the pasta section, one on the cold section.
What?
And it's very heavy, so we do...
And how many tables are there?
140 seaters.
That's insane.
Yeah. That was pretty crazy.
That's insane, man.
So you need to come in to do your prep like super early.
Early morning, yeah.
Get ready for lunch service. There's no break between the lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
That was one of the, let's say, hardest time I've worked in hospitality.
Unbelievable.
Then I couldn't sort out my visa, so I had to go back to France.
Okay.
And I applied for a student visa to come back. So my plan was to come back in Japan.
Yeah.
I was originally thinking to stay only like six months.
Yeah.
And I dropped my ticket return, my flight back, and just stayed in Japan for the whole year, right?
Wow.
Day to day. So I come back. By the time I come back, the chef had left. Too much. Too much work. Not enough people to work with him.
Yeah.
So it got really intense, and I heard he was starting throwing plates and stuff like that.
That's crazy. I mean,
yeah, that wasn't nice for him, you know.
Right. And Las Chicas is still around?
Or no,
it's not anymore.
Closed,
right?
6 years ago.
Right. Okay.
5 years ago. Yeah.
Okay. So.
So I come back. And there's been a change in management.
Yep.
New dude simplified the menu. Yep. Looks shit. The boss is borderline depressive because she can see her business going like bad.
Yeah.
And I had kept in touch with her like through mails and messages. So.
Yeah.
So. I was telling her, right, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
She said, okay, cool. You come back. And we're gonna do something for you. So I come back, do a couple of months in the kitchen, and one day I sit with her, and she's like, "Okay, you manage the kitchen. I want you to be the head chef." I'm like, "Okay, so I'm 21 years old at the time.
It's insane."
And I get to manage this big ass restaurant's cuisine.
That's crazy.
And that's when I met Haim, actually.
Okay.
Haim and Eric. Okay. So I hired Eric that second year.
Yeah.
And I remember with Haim at the beginning, we were like, lot of frictions.
Really?
Lots of frictions. Because he was there, he arrived while I was back in France.
Okay.
And for him, he's like, who the fuck is this little kid coming in? And he's like walking like he owns the place.
Yeah.
Which I... kind of was.
Well, you did the hard work.
I showed what I was about, you know, like for the year prior to that. So,
it's because it makes sense because he came in from Canada.
Yeah.
Because he was very cocky too when he came to Japan.
Yeah.
And I could see you
Mexican
guys.
Mexican and French.
Yeah,
and just
Mexican
like,
French. And
you know?
Get the fuck out of here.
But there's one thing though. It's we worked one shift on the hot section together.
Yeah.
And that's when you know like if somebody's good or not.
Yeah.
And somehow we automatically clicked. The very like us working together was always very smooth. Even though we didn't get along too much at the beginning. We're on the same section. It's like you know, it's very so organized. Don't need to speak. Don't need to. It's just like it's flowing.
Great. Because like, when I see you guys now, whenever I see you in the kitchen, you guys look like you're just doing things like by second nature.
You're
like,
in your
like,
zone. You're in your zone. When you do a service in the kitchen, it's like playing a team sport. You don't need to. You know where your partners are. And you know, everyone knows what they're supposed to do. Or at least that's to that level you want to get.
That's a great comparison. I actually think about like football. In the kitchen.
Very similar.
Similar. So, wow. Okay, you guys are three amigos hanging out in Las Chicas.
Exactly. I had frictions with Eric as well. If you ask these guys, at the beginning, like when I first got the chef position, if you were to ask them 10 years ago, like, how was I with them? And they would have said, like, oh, I was yelling, I was a nervous chef. I was really like, this is the way I want things. You guys do it. You don't want to do it. Get the fuck out. Like this.
Do you consider yourself a perfectionist?
I definitely have a little OCD.
OCD.
I need stuff to be organized, clean, and I don't know if it's perfection. But I have standards. And I hold my people to the same standards, you know.
Sure. I think that's what makes a good chef. I really do.
I calm down a lot in the way I vehicle my
Because when I first met you, I never think you as like a violent madman in the kitchen.
I was. I was not throwing plates. I was not throwing knives. But I would like. I had a couple times where I was grabbing somebody by the jacket and listen to me, you motherfucker.
Get this shit right.
Because you know, ultimately, when you're a head chef, anything that happens in your kitchen, is gonna be your fault. Basically, it's your responsibility.
But I mean, and also, I think your standards and that way of thinking as a chef, it's very in harmony in Japanese culture as well, I think. Like if you're gonna do something,
do it right.
Like if you do it half-assed, no one's gonna care. You know? So I think that makes sense. Let's get into that drunk night, that one night where you guys are all drunk and talking about this place.
So at the beginning, it was Bertrand that you might have met already. So Bertrand and Philippe.
Are there seven of you?
Now there's officially eight of us.
Wow. Okay.
Eight, but two are in China.
Okay.
And so hands on deck, we're six.
Six. Okay.
Six of us. Hands on deck.
Okay.
So basically, we started with Bertrand. So Philippe visiting craft beer places because he wanted to open his brewery. He was home brewing at the time, secret because it's forbidden in Japan. But
yeah. We'll get to that later.
Was brewing tea at his place.
There you go.
And so he was visiting places, got friendly with Bertrand.
Okay.
And then they got drunk one first time and talking about how Bertrand wanted his own bar.
Okay.
And Philippe his own brewery. And maybe the right way to proceed was first to open a bar to get some to get a name out there, you know?
Right.
And then open the brewery. And they started visiting spots. And the second spot they visited was in Shimokita, actually.
Okay.
pretty insane spot, good size, too big to just do a bump.
Right.
And I was at that time friends with Bertrand as well.
Okay.
And we were going out together, and it was...
Were you still in the Las Chicas Kitchen?
Yes, yes.
Still in the Kitchen, okay.
And Bertrand told Philippe about me.
Yeah.
That's a new guy that was managing a kitchen. Yeah. So that's how I met Philippe.
Yeah.
And that's how I joined the project.
Wow. Okay. So they're like, okay, we need a chef. Come on.
Yes. And at that moment, so I was already like a bit fed up with my work back in Las Chicas, and the place was gonna close soon. So.
Got it. Okay. Mm. So are all of you French? Or?
So now there's four of us French.
French, yeah.
One Canadian.
Okay.
Five of us French and okay. One Canadian.
It's just like
two Chinese. I mean, one Japanese, one Chinese.
One Japanese, Chinese. Okay. It's like the French Avengers coming
yes.
in. for this one purpose, one goal, because this is what, when I heard this story, that's what why I wanted to talk to you, because it's like, I have a lot of respect for you guys just pulling your assets together and making it work, because it is hard. It's hard in Tokyo.
It's a difficult experience. It's a good, yeah. You know, it's a long process. There's a lot of admin paperwork to put in place just to open the company.
Who,
you know,
who's? I mean, how did you just go with the flow, or did you just like?
So we are very lucky that at the time two of the group were already like well implemented in Japanese working society.
Okay. Okay.
Perfect level of Japanese.
Okay.
I mean, almost very close to perfect.
Yeah.
So that's how we were able to succeed in opening the company. But even with that, it was pretty difficult. So you might have a scene on internet, people who want to open Godo Gaisha or Kabushiki Gaisha, you can hire these companies and they do it for you. They go through the process for you.
Yep.
It's cost it's like $5,000 or something like that.
Jeez, okay.
But yeah, like when you don't have any idea where to start, sometimes it's just easier to contract one of these companies and set up everything for you.
Were there any like challenges or any barriers that you faced?
Like, just to open the company, I think we tried six or seven times.
Holy shit.
Because that's the Japanese system.
Yep.
They
have their own standards too.
Exactly. And they don't tell you like this is all you should do at the beginning.
No, they don't.
So you need build it up from the ground.
Yeah.
And they only tell you when it's wrong.
Exactly.
So you go, boom, first application, okay. We're not expecting to get there the first time, but being there, oh, this is wrong, you need to do that again. Okay.
That's exactly.
Oh, and that as well.
Yep.
And that as well. Like,
why don't you just tell us what to do?
And it's like 60 pages of... It's insane.
It's crazy.
It's insane.
And you guys just kept pushing through, like you're just persistent. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was mostly Philippe at that time. So Philippe, I was barely speaking any Japanese at the time. So there was no way I could help with that, right?
Yeah.
And Bertrand was already speaking quite good Japanese, but nowhere near good enough to...
Not like legal...
Yes.
Legal
Japanese.
Japanese,
So we get the company open, we start looking seriously at, we bring in the money first.
Yeah.
And we start looking at places.
Yeah.
And we were prospecting around Shimokitazawa, Shibuya, Nakameguro, Ebisu.
Yeah.
And we ended up here, and it's like a skeleton. It used to be a storage room and a parking lot.
That makes sense. When you see this.
Yes.
Because when you found this place, were you just like, this is it? This is definitely going to be the place?
Yeah. Because we wanted space.
Yeah.
Like the priority was really... We don't want a cramped up space where people are sitting one on each other.
And the location is great too, because it's right outside the main.
So that was a bit of a bet at the beginning, because there were not a lot of businesses in this area. So it's just build up. And I don't know if you've ever been in the old Shimokitazawa.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah.
So
I remember
the opening of the station was right opposite the Gasto.
Yes, yep.
Yep. And now it's all remodeled.
I don't like it now, but really, like,
I mean, I always have this discussion with one of my other associate, Scott. So he loves it. He loves the remodeling.
Yeah.
I like the remodeling building wise.
Yeah.
I'm just not super happy yet with the shops they put in. I think it looks fake.
Yeah, I mean, the traffic flow feels weird for me.
Really?
There's like two exits, right?
Yes.
And like three exits. And like the old Shimokita, you had two choices, like going up the hill to the left or.
The station itself, I think it's pretty good. It's wider, it's bigger, it feels like a proper busy station. And I was checking, actually the traffic.
Yeah.
Shimokitazawa is, I think, in the top 10 busiest station in Japan.
It is. So there's a lot of traffic
in the world.
Yes, it is.
Close to Uehara, Yogiohara, and Shimbashi.
Aren't like
and,
the top 10 train stations in the world, like,
it's probably all
Japan.
Japan. Yeah. It's probably all Japan. Oh, there's one in India, Mumbai. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's crazy, you know? Like, there's millions of people transiting through the stations. And the fact that this many people go through Shimo, for us,
I don't know if you anticipated it, but or predicted
we
that.
We didn't.
It's a lucky anticipation because the way the flow of Shimokita is, it is actually, because the rent there is way too expensive. So when it flows this way, because a lot of people, especially foreigners and younger people, they're living around this area.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. Like they're coming
home
or on the weekends they're going to the station. So
I would say that our biggest selling point is for people who live in the area on the weekdays.
Yeah.
Like the, not party goers, but you want to go out for a drink and a burger.
Yeah.
So we are that spot for them. And on the weekends, we're the spot for people who travel to Shimokitazawa and want to experience a coaster.
The vibes, like every time I bring someone outside of Japan, when last time I came here, I brought a friend.
Yes.
He's like, I love the vibes of this place. It's like, it's just, there's good, always good vibes. Mm. And so I think now when you had the place open up, when we were thinking about the menu, is this exactly?
No, it was completely different.
Okay.
So at the beginning, I was thinking French tapas.
Okay.
Like charcuterie assortment.
Yeah.
Cheese,
yeah.
More on the more expensive side, and it didn't work out. So what happened also is at the opening, I was not here for the opening of the bar.
Oh really?
Because I was sorting out visa problems home.
Okay.
So I missed the first 8 months of coaster.
Coasters, man.
And when I arrived, it was. Surviving, but we were far from what we are now doing. And
you guys definitely made it.
It took a couple of years, you know. And of course, there was COVID. So
now, this, what year is it? This is your fourth?
So we're gonna have our fifth anniversary in February.
Yeah. Okay.
2024. Yeah.
Which is gonna be big. I'll be here for that one. But man, 5 years in, and you guys started just before COVID.
And a year and a half before COVID. Yeah.
And you made it through.
Yes, that was pretty... and you know what? If anything, COVID served us well.
Probably did.
Because you were in Japan at the time, right?
Yep.
So what happened is Japanese government couldn't enforce curfews and everything. Because after the Second World War, they're not allowed. Yeah. I mean, so they were advising the population to remain home, don't open your shop. They had all this COVID
restrictions.
But they were giving money to the shops, right?
Yeah.
And we got some of the allocations, money. Man, a place the size of Coaster to survive, because we needed to keep on paying the rent and
staff.
Yeah. So yeah, that's one thing I think we're quite proud of is we didn't let go of our staff at the time. We just kept everybody. Of course, we had to manage the working hours and adapt it to the slower business.
Right.
But overall, we really made it good, you know. And that's when we also opened Kaigan.
Yeah.
So what happened is all the major craft beer places like Mikkeller, OL, they closed. Somehow it made more sense for them to close than remain open. So where all the craft beer lovers go?
Right here.
Come here.
It was like either here or some of the other bars that were fighting against the policy.
Yes, exactly.
And good, I'm going to say that good for you, because I think I don't talk about it on the podcast so much, but I strongly, my opinion was they were targeting your businesses.
Yeah.
And I really felt, and it was just wrong, because I felt like, okay, the Yamanote line is open. Kids are packed into going to schools. And
were they? They were going to school, yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know.
There was so many, I have a lot of friends and my family living in France, and that was a serious curfew.
I saw, so back in those days, I was still living in Nakameguro.
Yeah.
All these mom and pop restaurants and businesses closed. Mm. That were there for like 20, 30 years because of that.
Yes, yeah. That was sad to see like so many businesses already in like just benchmarking what they're supposed to do to keep the business going. Mm. And a thing like COVID, it just
moving on.
Ruins it, you know?
I want to say, the final thing I want to say is, like, I'm glad that you guys have the... I wish Mitty was here to talk about Kaigan Brewery.
Yeah.
Do you know how they found that place in Tateyama?
So, Philippe purchased the place, when was it? 5 years ago.
Okay.
As a secondary home, a vacation home.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you heard about it, but... if you buy what they call a kuminka, government gives you subsidies to build it back up, and so it's one way to avoid taxes.
You know, what's funny is my wife's good friend. She lives near that brewery. She drove by that place many times, and she knows the price of that place before.
Yeah.
And it was really cheap.
It was cheap. Super cheap, yeah.
So good for you guys through that. But like,
so basically, he bought the house, and the house had the tool shed on the side.
Yeah,
like a two-story tool shed. Yeah. So it's a big tool shed. And what was the tool shed is now the brewery.
I see.
So it's just extension of that tool shed. Make it neat and clean inside.
Yeah.
And now we have the brewery in there.
And then you have a place to hang out while you're going surfing.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's, you know,
that's
double
so
use.
Awesome. I mean, Tomas, I'm so happy that you were able to have a chance to talk with me. Last thing, man. What are some things that we can share to for future events or future things that you want to do with Coasters?
So now we're looking at expansion.
Okay.
So we are we have a couple of projects.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to say too much because it might not happen, but 80% chance happening. So so Coaster 2 and maybe Coaster 3.
Nice.
So
keep it going.
That, and of course the brewery. We just got the license for import export.
Nice. Okay.
We also got a canning machine a couple months ago, so we're gonna start making cans.
Wow.
And putting more Kaigan out there, and you know, it's just Now we're ramping up. Like we've got good team, good core.
Yeah, so, there you go.
Yeah.
Next stage, the international market.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's the plan, man.
Dude.
Take over the world with beer.
What is it with French guys coming to all over the world, taking over with beer, you know? What's going on with that? I'm calling you guys the French Avengers.
That's yeah.
Saving the world with beer.
Saving the world with the beer. Saving the galaxy maybe one day.
Maybe. I don't know. But anyways, Thomas, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
Anyways, I know you're busy, but cheers.
Cheers.
All right.
A big shout out again to Thomas for letting me come and chat and hear about his life and the works and the good vibes in Coasters Tokyo. And also a shout out to all the staff and a lot of good people that work at Coasters Tokyo. So you can find them on Instagram at Coaster Tokyo. That's all one word. As well as their brewery, Kaigan Brewery. So at Kaigan_brewery. If you have some free time, whether weekday or weekend, go head down, grab a burger, grab a pint, or just chill out in the area, just feel the vibes. You are listening to Made in Japan, Conversations with Meljo Catalan. For any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email me at japanmademepodcast@gmail.com, as well as hit me up on my Instagram at Made in Japan Podcast. Thank you so much again for listening, and thank you so much. Feel free to check out the other wonderful guests on other episodes if you'd like. I'm going to continue on and push on. Before I forget, this is probably going to be one of the last episodes of this year. So if you're just listening to this before 2024 rises upon us, I would like to wish you guys all a happy holidays and a happy new year. So I will see you all next time and next year. Till then, peace out.